coverage of the Tuesday's elections continues from the State Senate parlor. We're interviewing Assembly Speaker Robin Voss. Mr. Voss, congratulations on your re-election.
Thank you very much. I'm proud to have carried Racine County, my best race ever, actually.
And Assembly Republicans had a pretty good Tuesday, sir.
We sure did. I am proud of the team and how hard they worked. It's an unbelievable thing to be able to watch so many people of diverse backgrounds come together and fight for a common cause. We had something we call Legipalooza, where all across the state, legislators, some who hadn't even been elected yet, who just won their primaries, went and helped their new colleagues. We had people literally probably do over 50,000 doors as part of our Legipalooza effort in all of our competitive seats. And you add that together with the wonderful staff we had, Governor Walker and the team that he put together. It was really an awful great time to be able to come together and work on it.
Did the Act 10 debate end Tuesday, sir?
It ended for me, actually, with the recall. Some of the people, I actually looked out my window as I was making some phone calls, and there were still a dozen protesters walking around the Capitol wearing Halloween masks. For some people, I don't know if they will ever be able to accept reality, but for me, the recalls purely said Act 10 was a past issue. Even in this campaign, Mary Burke rarely mentioned it unless she wanted to rev up her base. So I think for everybody in Wisconsin, they should now say that issue is settled law, and we're not going to come back and talk about it.
Your leadership elections are when, sir?
On Monday at 11 Monday. O'clock.
You're the only candidate for speaker, so you will be speaker.
As of right now, yeah.
What's the first bill you want your House to pass next session, Mr. Speaker?
Well, the first thing we're going to do is we're going to sit down with our leadership team and say, what are all of the things that we want to focus on? As you know, Assembly Republicans did something which we haven't done in the past, and that's put forward an agenda of our ideas prior to the election. Things
we
want to be
for. We're going to go through that. Go ahead.
But things we want to be for. So I think it's presumptuous of me to say, here's what the first bill is going to be until I have an opportunity to sit down with our brand new caucus and our brand new leadership team to say, okay, what are all of our community priorities, not just my own?
This is a very elaborate plan. I'm going to ask you, did you get out ahead of Governor Walker and Senate Majority Leader Fitzgerald by releasing this?
No,
it's
Governor
a pretty
Walker,
detailed agenda.
Well, it is a detailed agenda. As you know, Steve, I like to have a plan. I like to execute a plan. I like to telegraph it so people aren't surprised when we do those things. Governor Walker said that in his first term, he wished we would have had more discussion of what our issues were before the election so people weren't surprised. Governor Walker put out a pretty detailed jobs plan. I mean, he did that same thing, and I wanted Assembly Republicans to do it in a more comprehensive way than just on jobs. That's what our plan does. Senator Fitzgerald, he had a copy of the plan beforehand. I look forward to meeting tomorrow. I know I'm going to be sitting down with the governor's chief of staff and Senator Fitzgerald to start those discussions, and I think next week with the governor. So I am ecstatic about the results, and I am so excited about getting back here in January to work, and I want to bring everybody's ideas together. I think this is a great place to start, but it's certainly not the finish.
Pending two potential recounts, you may have 63 of the 99 seats.
Right. 18 That's new freshmen.
None of your members lost.
That's correct.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, actually a great record. So not only do we keep all of our incumbents running for re-election, all of them won. We kept every single Republican seat that was being vacated. That's awesome. And then on top of it, we added three more members who took out an incumbent Democrat. A great record, one that I'm really proud of. But it just means that we have lots of great people who are going to be in the room helping to make the ideas work.
You know, it was one thing for you to come out with this on October 21st because we hadn't had the elections yet.
Mm-hmm.
So now I've gone through it. I have some specific
questions.
Yes. I think on page 3 or 4, when it comes to income taxes, we will look to reduce rates again in the next session.
Yep.
That costs money, as you well know, as a former co-chairman of finance, and now there's this debate over a potential deficit. You're going to push for another rate decrease.
That's what I'd like to do. I mean, of course, number one, we have to make sure that the numbers work out. So I have promised that every single session that I am speaker, we are going to cut people's taxes. Does that mean that we'll be able to have billions of dollars in tax cuts? It depends on what the numbers are. But I certainly am going to say we need to fund our priorities, making sure we take care of people who are in poverty that need to have health care, making sure that we have good schools. But then any money that's left over that's found either through cutting waste and cutting the opportunity to cheat the system, all that should go back into tax relief.
There should be a reasonable cap on the amount of revenue the state can raise, and only voters should decide when to lift that cap. Two questions. Are you talking about moving a constitutional amendment, or is this a advisory referendum to limit tax
collection? I'd certainly like to have the discussion. I mean, I was disappointed that we never had an opportunity.
On a potential constitutional amendment?
Yeah, I was disappointed that we never had an opportunity to do some sort of Tabor, like they did in Colorado, where you have a permanent cap on spending. I think that I'd certainly like to explore that. We've done that with municipalities pretty effectively, where they've been able to control spending now almost 20 years, and we still have seen no real degradation of public services. So if it's good enough for local governments, I'd certainly like to have us explore it at the state level as well.
There's a study committee, as you well know, because you appointed it, Is it your goal to end the personal property tax, sir?
I'd like to look at it. It's very expensive, and I want to make sure that we do it in a way that focuses on creating the best opportunity for job growth. So when we look and say, if we have a surplus, where should taxes be cut? Income taxes are one of my highest priorities, property taxes as well. Does that mean it would just be in the personal property tax? It's definitely a possibility. But I want to once again have that caucus-wide discussion so we can have our priorities literally matching up what we heard in the campaign trail. One of the things that I think we deserve credit for is making sure that we govern like we campaign. But we campaign by listening and by saying, what do you want Wisconsin to look like 5 and 10 years from now? So I think I need to owe that to my caucus in order to have the same discussion before I say this is what we're going to do.
Course correction for GAB. Mm-hmm. Would this include a rewrite of campaign finance laws to reflect the Citizens United and its legacy?
Yes. Yeah, I mean, if you remember
Should companies be able to contribute just like?
You bet. So let's just take away that the political parties operate right now. Under previous changes made by Democrats when they were in control, unions can give unlimited money to any political party. But businesses can't do the same thing. They have to go to a third-party entity. Well, I think we should have parity so that business and unions are on the same page. I don't want to disadvantage unions, but I certainly don't want to disadvantage businesses to be able to participate in the process. One of the criticisms I think a lot of people have said is these shadowy third-party groups who run issue ads but don't have to disclose their donors. Look, under the Constitution and under the First Amendment, I believe they have the right to exist, and I'm glad they do because more political speech is good for our society. But I also think that if a political party could be able to go out and raise money from businesses like they do from unions, it's transparent. It has to be disclosed to the public. It's all available online. I would certainly prefer to have it going into a system where more transparency exists than one where the Constitution says it doesn't have to. So hopefully we can find some bipartisan support for that. That's one of the things that we actually agreed on with the Democrats last session and the bill that we passed, increasing limits so we just keep up with the pace of inflation. Some basic things should be able to happen. I hope if the Democrats are willing to sit down and do it in a bipartisan way, that would be my preference. It's my preference on every topic, but it really depends on how they want to choose to participate.
If a panel of retired judges has not worked as the GAB policy...
I didn't say that.
Well, if you want a course correction for GAB.
Right.
What's a better panel if six ex-judges, you question whether that they have been affected?
Sure. Well, two things. First of all, I don't necessarily think that the idea of the six independent judges is a bad one. I voted for that. I think that that's a process that I'm still pondering in my own mind if there's a better way, but I think that in general it's not a bad idea. So here's the problem. Number one, having non-elected judges could be an issue so that they never have to face the voters. We only take retired judges. Maybe that's not the best way. I'm not certain on that. But I think that the idea of having a professional staff that presents the arguments where they've made up their mind and they go and tell the GAB, this is what we think, and in almost every single circumstance, the GAB acts as a rubber stamp, that's the disconnect to me. And then really the straw that broke the camel's back was when the director of the GAB made a decision to go out in a no-bid contract without consulting any of the GAB or the legislature or the clerks, redesign the ballot, and never even ask permission. So I think sometimes I feel like he believes he's running the GAB. I think it should be the judges. So I think the staff and the way that the staffing is done at the GAB is the biggest problem that we need to fix, at least from my perspective. So I'm open to ideas, but I think we have some creative ways that won't ever hurt the independence of the GAB, which is different than the way we are right now, which I think is much more partisan, and it shouldn't be that way.
Moving on to K-12 schools, reading from your summary, you want to pass a bill that would encourage school districts to keep a majority of their operating expenditures in the classroom.
Yep.
You're going to mandate then how much goes to the classroom?
Not necessarily mandated. I mean, there was a proposal that I sponsored several years ago with Senator Harsdorf where we tried to say that 70% of the dollars that are generated should be spent on impacting students. I don't necessarily want a mandate, but I certainly think that we should look for ways to not allow the bureaucracy to grow amok, to not allow things that don't actually help children to take up more resources as we're looking for ways to put more dollars in the classroom. Hopefully that's another area where Democrats and Republicans can work together to say every dollar that goes in the classroom produces better results than just saying we're going to put more in the classroom and never actually measure it.
Expand public school open enrollment and school choice reform. Does this refer to popping the 1,000 cap?
I certainly want to have that cap be higher. Now, my preference, if we could do it financially...
Higher or completely removed?
Well, I'd prefer to have it removed.
Okay.
But we have to make sure that that number works, and we have to make sure that we have a funding mechanism and it doesn't hurt public schools. I mean, there are a lot of issues that go into it. But I think that when we saw today, probably in the Democratic caucus, one of the key opponents of school choice has always been Mandy Wright. She actually went on that statewide listening tour bashing school choice. She partnered up with Dale Schultz, who's another school choice opponent, and he lost. She lost. So I think that's an example where if school choice was as popular an issue as they said it was not, they certainly wouldn't have had Mandy Wright get defeated on Election Day. So I feel really good about expanding school choice. I'm excited about it, but we're going to do it in a financially responsible way.
Having interviewed dozens of your candidates to set up the election, mm-hmm. I know how many of them cite Common Core standards. Mm-hmm. How do you want to proceed on that issue? Because your goals are creation of Wisconsin-based academic standards.
Yep, it's another discussion we have to have with our caucus, so I don't want to prejudge where they're going to go. Last time around, I formed a special task force on Common Core. We had hearings around the state. We had legislators who proposed legislation. Unfortunately, it couldn't get through the state Senate. I think, hopefully, the state Senate's going to be a little more friendly to trying to find an answer that doesn't say we are not going to have standards, because I certainly believe in those, but they should be Wisconsin-based, written by educators and parents living in Wisconsin, not some bureaucrats in another state.
Higher ed, reform UW system schools, and specifically, systematic review of courses offered in order to identify possible inefficiencies that make it more difficult for students to enroll in required courses. Mm-hmm. Do you think the LED should say XYZ classes shouldn't be offered at 6 of the 26 university campuses?
I'd prefer those decisions to be made by the regents. I believe in shared governance and the idea of asking the university to be as independent as we can. But as you know, in their budget request, they came forward asking for $95 million of additional funding, which in many ways would just backfill the tuition freeze. We have to be careful with that.
Yes.
But I think there are a lot of inefficiencies inside the system that we could change so that professors actually are teaching more, that we have an opportunity for those classes that hold kids up so that all of a sudden they're going 4 or 5 years instead of getting out in 3 to 4. Those are the kind of things I want to focus on. So we have maybe kids who aren't working a summer job, maybe they do year-round school so they can get out in 3 years. There's a lot of ideas that I think we should explore to reduce the cost of higher education without costing taxpayers more.
Okay, we're almost out of time. I want to ask about one more. If you're on public assistance, you would get a electronic benefit transfer card. Mm-hmm. Is that to avoid fraud?
Yeah, I mean, the whole idea is to say, let's take all the benefits that you have, put them on a single card, put your picture on there so you can utilize it to vote hopefully someday, but also have an opportunity to make sure that there are responsibilities that go with the opportunity to get public assistance for the short term. One idea that we have in our plan is on unemployment insurance. I certainly want to make sure everybody gets job training who has an opportunity to say they're out of work. But after 12 weeks, we'd like to require people to sign up with a temp service so that the income that would be earned in that temp service would not cut their unemployment benefits, but it would get them back into the workforce so that they're not sitting at home trying to find a job for several days a week. They're actually in the workforce earning money, showing hopefully that they are ready to work when they go back into the full-time jobs. So there's a lot of creative ideas, a lot of good things that we're going to push next session, and I'm excited to get there.
Just two final questions. Mm-hmm. Do you now expect that there's been an election for the governor to approve the Kenosha Casino?
I don't know yet. I mean, Governor Walker, I've tried to give him as much latitude as I possibly could. As you know, I'm a supporter of the Kenosha Casino, so I certainly think it'd be good for our area. But you also know that when Governor Doyle signed sweetheart compacts with the Indian tribes, saying that it could cost taxpayers hundreds of millions of dollars if a casino happens, we have to do that very carefully, because the last thing I want to do is hurt our ability to have a tax cut or a property tax freeze statewide because we approve a casino that wasn't financially sound. So I want to have all those decisions go together, and hopefully he'll come to a consensus where the tribes might agree, Wisconsin's protected, and we can get the jobs.
And then finally, should your name be on a list of potential GOP candidates for governor in 2018?
Probably not. I love being the speaker. I have been a creature of the legislature. I hope to stay here for a good long while because I think this is where real public policy happens, and I'm excited for that.
Speaker Robin Voss, congratulations on your win and the growing majority in the Assembly. Thanks for your time.
Thanks, Steve. I appreciate it.
Thank you.